Welcome to Recast, presented by the Baptist Union of Scotland. Each episode will look at a key issue of mission or discipleship for church leaders in Scotland. We will be bringing you key voices, practical insights and unique stories, all focused on the church in Scotland.
Welcome to the Recast. My name's Glenn Innes and I am here again with my colleague and friend Lisa Holmes.
Hello everybody.
I realise I've just changed that up. I always used to just call you my colleague. Things must have changed between us. You've become my friend. That's nice.
Good. After all this time.
I know. Welcome everybody back to this series that we're just getting into, this series on healthy leaders and what it means for us to be healthy leaders. This time we're having a look at healthy marriage, and we have Steve and Claire Musters with us.
Yeah, we do. We thought that it was really important to look at marriage and the particular experience of leadership that's part of marriage and kind of pressures. And Steve and Claire were recommended to us. They've been through their own struggles, and they're very honest about that, and just worked to see God at work in their marriage and to learn better patterns of relating to each other. They do a lot of, engage with a lot of counselling and leading of marriage retreats. They've written a book together, which must be quite challenging, writing a book with anybody else, called Grace-Filled Marriage. And so they just, you know, diving a little bit into these particular pressures that leadership puts on marriage. Obviously, not all of them are unique, but it was really helpful. Steve's a, well, they both lead in church. Steve's a vicar. Is he a vicar?
No, he's not a vicar. It's an independent church, I think.
Church,
but
that's right.
He's kind a minister of some sort, a vicary, an English minister of some description.
That's right. So maybe I should know better.
Yeah, it's brilliant, though. Mm-hmm. Really helpful conversation, and trust it'll be useful for you.
We are absolutely delighted to have Steve and Claire with us today. Thank you for joining us on the podcast.
Thanks for having us.
That was perfect, wasn't it?
That was a big thing for us, wasn't it?
Stereo. It's awesome. So we have four of us on the podcast. And I was thinking earlier today, I think that's the first time we've had four people on the podcast. So that's that'll be an interesting exercise to make enough space for all of us to be heard. So that I'm sure there's a lesson to be learned in there in the midst of all of this as well. I'm sure many folks might not know who you are. So I wonder, would you just introduce yourselves to us? Who are Steve and Claire?
That's a good question. So we're Steve and Claire. And I'm the senior pastor of River Church in Sutton, which is a London borough, but it's just in Surrey as well. So we've been there since its conception, since it was planted.
In 20 years ago.
Yeah, now. We're celebrating our 20th anniversary. Time flies when you're having fun.
I work in part of the leadership team, but that's not my job. I am an author, a speaker, and an editor. So I come from an editorial book publishing background. But since then, I have branched out into magazines and I've written quite a few books. And we have, in recent years, written together as well, which was an interesting experience.
I kind of almost want to ask about that. I mean, what was it like writing together?
Let's just say we're very different characters.
Yes, I'm the organised one. Yeah. So, and I'm used to the process of book publishing. So I kind of spearheaded things. But having said that, Steve has got a wealth of wisdom inside him. And when I just said, come on, you need to write something on this, he just made some time and wrote it. And it was fantastic. So I might have done all of the admin and pushing things forward. But it was great to have his input in it all, because it can be quite lonely being an author, actually, when you're just working by yourself all the time. So
I was just grateful that the title was Grace Filled Marriage, because we needed a lot of grace just actually getting the book done and written. So
Yeah. Well done for getting it completed and still being married and still being on a podcast talking about it. So that's good. Tell us something about yourselves that we can't read on the internet.
Oh, wow. Ooh. You've stumped us there. I grew up in America and used to sound like an American.
When I first met Claire, we were in a church youth group together. And she had a particularly whiny American accent.
Thanks.
I do love American accents. Bless her, she lost it really quick. I had a strange career path. I left school and ended up being a game warden in a safari park in Tanzania.
Oh, wow.
For a while.
Don't start asking about that because you'll never get onto what we're supposed to be talking about.
Fell in love with the people and then ended up getting into the music industry before going full-time into ministry in the church setting.
Wow. Yeah. There's a couple of turns in there that sound like that's a podcast in its own right. From gamekeeper to the music industry and the music industry to the pulpit. There we go.
A lot of transferable skills, actually.
Definitely, yeah. Between being a gamekeeper and being a church leader, I can see.
Like the herding cats bit.
Obviously not in my church, but I've heard it can be true.
Absolutely.
Fantastic. Guys, your book is about marriage, and that's why we've got you on today as part of this series, looking at what it means to be a healthy leader and thinking about what it is to have a healthy marriage. And I wonder, you know, like lots of people are married and have something to say, but you guys have some particular insight around marriage. And I wonder if you would maybe just kind of lay out for some folks a bit of your story that will perhaps lead us into some questions that we could dig into.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, go for it.
The book is not just our story, and we have a lot of different contributors because we know that. I mean, every marriage is different, and although we're all under the same kind of pressures, we will all have our individual circumstances, etc. But I'd already written a book called Taking Off the Mask, and we'd had a lot of feedback from people that they wanted something that told both our sides of the story and also focused more just on marriage. Because as Steve said, he was a record producer, so we got married very, very young. And we'd been married for 10 years and I've hardly ever saw him. Within this time, we became part of a small group of people who moved from our church to start a new one, which is actually the church that we're still a part of. And so we were part of that core leadership group for that. But just as that was beginning, our relationship completely fell apart and I left Steve. And that was from a decade of loneliness and pain. It was kind of pushed and spearheaded from a friendship that got out of hand and a guy who kind of said, I'm leaving, are you coming? But it was very much born out of pain and difficulty and disappointment. And a lot of people said, we had no idea. They put me on a pedestal because I was a leader. And they were completely and utterly shocked. Obviously, this was an incredibly painful time in our marriage. But I think the reason it got to that point is we'd never shared with anybody that we were struggling. Mm. We'd got married so young. We were the only people in our friendship group that were married for a long time. And we just looked at all the married couples that we didn't really know in our church and thought, well, they all look like they've got it together. Steve, you can answer for yourself on this, but I wanted to talk to people, but Steve was very much a private person.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, it was a classic case of denial. I knew there were issues in our marriage that needed sorting out. In particular, you know, obviously Claire's deep loneliness. And I couldn't see a practical solution apart from just leaving that job, which, you know, in where I was at, I just thought, well, I don't know if that's a solution at all. So it was bury your head in the sand. Occasionally, probably twice a year, we'd have a blowout and just, you know, Claire would say, I can't go on like this. And in my back of my head, I just thought, it will settle down. It will settle down. It's a season. It will pass. And when Claire said, I think we need to talk to people, I was like, no, I don't know. You don't want to bother people. It's not a problem. We're okay. It's just a blip that happened to go on for nearly 10 years, you know, and it's that sort of approach to everyone else has got their life together, or seemingly. We're the only ones who are dealing with this situation. Again, feeling very isolated, simply because we didn't reach out and speak to others. And obviously that was particularly my perspective. You know, I didn't want us to kind of admit, it's a pride thing at the end of the day, admitting actually we've got some issues here, we need help.
I guess that leads us to the place where your marriage is broken, but clearly that's not where it ended.
Thankfully not. No.
Otherwise, that would be a different podcast.
Yes, thank you so much for having us. Goodbye.
No, thankfully, I mean, incredibly painful at the time, but thankfully that other relationship broke down within the space of a few weeks. And rather tellingly, Steve was the person that I called to say, here I am, this is what's happened. And he actually dropped what he was doing. He was in the middle of a recording session and picked me up and drove me to my parents' house, where I went to live for 3 or 4 months. And in that time, there was a lot of soul searching for both of us. Mm. I think Steve was keen to get me back and get everything back on an even keel. And we did reach out to people. I'd had a lot of people say to me, well, you just need to get back together, don't you? And then it was the first person who said to me, before you can even begin considering that, you need to deal with the pain that you are sitting in. And that was the person that I felt I could open up to, that actually recognized where I was at. And so there was a lot of that. I think we did make the decision to have counseling. We had some quite intensive individual counseling, and then we came together, and then I moved back home and we found a couple near us that we were continuing to do that. And it was hard work, really hard work. I think as someone who got married very young and didn't do marriage prep because I refused to do it by myself, because he was always in the studio. And I tended to go to church by myself because he was hardly ever there, as I am not doing that. I had very romantic ideals about what marriage would be like. And so we were kind of basically starting again, as I, how do we put those foundations in place that we'd never had? Amazingly, I mean, we had talked and prayed a lot over that decade to see if there was a different job for Steve, to see if there was something else he could do. And neither of us could think of anything else. But when he went to his boss and said, this is what's happened, his boss then turned around and said, okay, you want your wife back, we're going to shut the studio at 8 p.m. every night, which is unheard of because they work around the clock. Mm. And then we were thinking, why on earth did we not speak up earlier? It's yeah. Like there was a miraculous answer to this. I think one of the hardest things I ever had to do was walk back into the church, because we were a small group of people and I'd been part of that leadership team. Everybody knew. Mm. And yet the love and care that I got from people. Yes, they were quick to say, you guys need to be in counselling, which we were doing. But that the love and care that they showed enabled us to stay where we were. It was really tough. I can remember we went on holiday that year and I said to Steve, right, we really need to wrestle with God about whether we should start somewhere fresh, because this is quite awkward. And we had about a week of hearing nothing, and I was getting really irritated. And I said, come on, God, can you give us an answer? And I just really felt in my spirit him say, well, have I told you to move? Have I said anything else than what I'd said initially? And so that was really humbling, that even though we'd completely mucked up, that actually God's calling that he had on our life. And we now know why. I mean, Steve had a period of time where he was in the studio, but also part-time working for the church. And when our pastor retired, he was asked to take over. And now I head up the worship team, women's ministry, and we work together a lot of the time. So God had a purpose for us being where we were. And actually what we went through spearheaded a lot of what I do in my writing and ministry, because it's about authenticity and being real and not walking into church and putting your mask on and saying, I'm fine, everything's fine. It's about actually, we need to have those safe relationships within church where we can be honest with each other.
As Claire said, it was a real journey. And, you know, when the proverbial rug was pulled from under my feet and the door slammed and she said, you know, I'm leaving. you know, I mentioned in the book, it was just my first thought was how complacent had I been not to see this coming? Mm. And why did it take that to finally wake me up to crumbs? We have an issue here. We need help. Mm. And, you know, again, God just gave me a real sense of you need to pursue, Claire. You need to fight for this marriage. And I had such a clear sense of, I suppose, a purpose. God led me to Hosea, and I just, you know, just obviously talking about his sense of I will pursue those who, you know, where we've been hurt, where there's been trust that's been broken. It was like God was saying, this is exactly, I experience this all the time. I will help you through this. And so, yeah, I just pursued Claire. As I said, she was with this other guy, as she said, and I just prayed, God, break in. And almost there was a moment where I was praying that specifically. I felt something had changed. And it was just shortly after that, Claire called me and said, can you pick me up? So I knew God was at work. I had no idea and no expectation in one sense how the next weeks, months, years would pan out. But I knew God had called me. You know, I made those vows to Claire. I need to honor those. I need to pursue her. I need to love her as I should. You know, and those years of neglect, you know, building trust back into our relationship from both sides where trust had been broken. That's a lifelong journey still.
Yeah. I mean, thank you. Thank you for being so honest and real and authentic, because that's just actually so helpful for all of us to hear that. And I'm sure that people listening are going to resonate with some of the things that you've said. And it's such an amazing story, isn't it, of God's grace and of your grace to each other and some resilience and persistence and perseverance through what must have been really difficult times as well. I mean, it's easy, isn't it, I guess, to jump to the end point of the damaged marriage. And often, you know, that is what we see, isn't it? We see the end point when it just is like, oh my gosh, what them? It's exactly what you were saying. People were shocked. I imagine in your own lives, but also listening to other people, you see some of the early signs. You know, what are maybe some of the things that we need to be looking out for or more conscious of paying attention to earlier on to let us know that things are maybe not exactly how they should be?
That's a good question. I think for me, I think communication is a key identifier. How are we communicating? Are we communicating? Are we being short with each other? A lot of that's to do with, can be due to tiredness. Mm-hmm. And again, just that sense of complacency. And I think just that sense of actually ultimately grace kills complacency. And we can become so complacent with each other, take each other for granted. And that can be really subtle, but so it's seen in our language and how we speak to one another.
Can you give a bit more of an example of that, Steve? Because I think that's really important. You know, it does sometimes get to the, you know, oh, it's your turn to put the bins out and who's collecting child A from school today or whatever. You know, what do you, because those conversations happen. So what's the kind of differential that we're looking for there in terms of?
Again, I think grace is a key word. I think when we are just, I think when there is a sense of resentment building up, it can be very, very, again, it can be subtle, but we need to be really on it. Are we harboring resentment? You know, it can be so mundane in all those little jobs that just, you know, it's just like, oh, crumbs, I did that yesterday. And forgetting to actually connect beyond those everyday mundane chores, to actually talk about us, talk about how are you doing? How was your day? How are you feeling? That sense of connection at a deeper level, when that starts to go and all the conversation, all the talks about either, you know, if you're in church ministry, talking about the church and talking about issues there, or talking about, you know, just the day-to-day chores, if that's all your communication is, then I would strongly suggest actually, you know, do a little MOT on your marriage. Where are we at? How are we doing? I think those, just keeping a track of your communication
I think you can also, you can become aware we are so busy in our lives that actually, rather than being next to one another, and okay, you might be in different jobs, but you've got, there is still that connection. You do still feel like you're part of the same team. When we get over busy, when we get overtired, when we might have something really pressing in our work life, or our partner might, it can be, you can kind of seem like you're heading off in different directions. And if you're not having those connections, and if you're not taking the time and interest to find out about what the other person's life is like at the moment, if you are in a really busy season, you can just go way off. Mm. I think for me, as someone who can be quite emotionally attached to people, I think a real warning sign can be is, who's the person that you want to confide in most? Who do you tell? Mm. And I think that's where my attachment came, because I didn't have someone at home. I had somebody who was very willing to give that to me, and that's where it spiraled. But you can do that with your with your best friends. You can find, actually, I'm spending more time chatting to my girlfriends about what's going on in my life than I am my husband. It's those kind of things. And it can be really tough if you are going through a hard season and you don't really want to talk to your husband or wife. So it is about the making that decision to prefer the other and make the space for them, even in a time where that might be quite difficult. And I mean, we're not saying we've got all the answers, and we're not saying that life is easy, because we're probably walking through one of the most difficult seasons we've had as a family. We now have kids. And you do have to keep revisiting this. We do marriage prep and marriage MOTs with couples in our church. And each time we do it, we find, oh, my goodness, we really need to work on this area again. And oh, we've forgotten about that. And so it is really important, as Steve mentioned, to do an MOT on your marriage. Actually, make some time and space. If you know that it won't happen in your home, maybe go out for a coffee together, or go out and go on a country walk. Do something that you know will force you almost to take that time to intentionally set aside and actually talk about where your relationship is at.
Yeah. Do you think there's any specific things that are true for leaders? We, you know, our podcast is a lot for leaders and church ministers. Do you think there's any specific things that are vulnerabilities for church leaders in this kind of area?
The first thing that springs to mind for me is just talking about church all the time. And I mean, we had this, I'm fortunate enough to have Mondays off, and quite often Claire will make time in her schedule to take some time off so we can be off together without the kids. You know, they're at school. And we actually brought ourselves off, you know, actually, I think you kind of pointed out, we're talking about church again. You know, we're talking about, you know, how so-and-so getting on, and what should we do about this situation and that situation. And it's just like, you know, let's talk about us. Let's talk about our kids. Let's talk about, you know, other stuff. And I think particularly as a church leader, you know, it's not a 9-to-5 job. No one thinks it is. And it's not meant to be in that sense, but you do need to have those boundaries. And actually, there is a wider context. And ultimately, my first ministry is to my wife. And I think that's an important lesson to learn.
And I would say, off the back of that, actually showing one another that you prioritize each other. Mm. I think it was just within the first few years of Steve going full time for the church that we met with some people that are leaders over us, I guess is the best way of saying it. And we were sharing how things were going. And I said that because he's always on call, as it were, there are evening meetings, there are times where something happens and he's called out stuff. And I said, actually, I'm beginning to feel like this feels almost like it was. And I'm beginning to sense that pain resurfacing. And the guy just stopped me and turned to Steve and said, are you hearing this? Mm. Because you really need to guard against this. And I think we can, one of the things that, I mean, and we've both done it, when you're heavily involved in things within church, quite often you can feel like you're the last person on their list of priorities because there's so many other people to look after. And because that's your job, you kind of feel like I need to do that. But actually there is a time to say, no, I have a team of people. And no, I also have a wife and a family, or a husband and a family. So it is sometimes making those hard calls. But actually that also teaches your congregation that actually family and marriage are important to me. Mm. So that's quite important too.
A lot of wisdom there. I'm kind of wanting to rewind a little bit to something. I'm a bit slower than Lisa, so I'm trying to, my brain's catching up. Is this moment when you know things are not quite as they should be? And I think this is particularly true for ministers, because we, I think it's dead easy for us to look at someone else's marriage and go, ooh, yeah, they need some help. They need an MOT. We probably need to round up some cash and get them some counselling and do that piece. But it's the hard part of that first conversation that says, look, dear, I don't think we're doing very well here. Like that really hard moment, or that even perhaps being willing to say, this isn't working for me. That courage to admit it in your own life. Do you have any? I was going to say tips. That's a terrible phrase, but like how do you begin those conversations? Because I think as ministers, we're good at doing them with other people. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But in our own marriage, it can be such a difficult thing to do.
Yeah, I totally agree. And obviously, that's part of the reason we ended up in the situation we were in, because I was incredibly reticent to ask for help. But I think, you know, we mentioned marriage MOTs, you know, and I think something like that, where you have that honest conversation with the two of you, gives you permission to talk about and actually honestly assess where you're at. But also, if you have a trusted couple in your church, it might be part of your leadership team, it might be part of another church, you know, something completely separate. And sometimes that's really helpful if it is separate, who you can just confide in. And just sometimes it's a case of just talking through some issues, resetting boundaries, resetting priorities. And sometimes it's a case of actually, yeah, I think we do need to get some counseling here. We need to get some professional external help here. But I don't know. For me, it's a case of having that healthy conversation to begin with.
Yeah, and I think there's an awful lot of advice out there about having a date night a week. Mm. And actually, if you know that you find it difficult to talk about the state of your relationship, I would actually pencil it into your diary. If you don't ever do it, and try an experiment, take a month where you actually once a week you actually just sit down with each other. And Maybe you check diaries at the beginning of each week and see what you're both going to be doing. In that time, you could say, well, how are we doing? Is there anything that we need to change here? I wear my heart on my sleeve, and I find it very difficult not to express how I'm feeling. So I'm very good at coming forward and saying things, but I also get incredibly defensive when Steve says something to me. So we are all different characters, mm-hmm. and you have to deal with all of that, because I can rise up defensively straight away, and I have to learn that actually I need to shut up and let him talk, and just take some. And sometimes you need some time and space away from each other. If one of you raises something, rather than trying to thrash it out, which is another thing that we were taught in counselling, because I'd want to sort everything out straight mm-hmm. away. And they'd say, well, actually, no, you need this time and this space. And sometimes I like to have a quick resolution. Steve takes time to think about things, which can be infuriating.
I'm a slow processor.
And yeah. Yet having that time and space means actually you also have time and space to pray about something as well. And you might come up with a different solution than you would if you just bulldozed your way through it, which I can have a tendency to do. So I think there is wisdom in taking time and space to process as well.
And yeah, I would just add exactly that, but don't wait until there's issues. Do it as part of your regular planned, you know, as Claire said, stick it in your diary, so that actually it's just touching base. It's just having those deeper conversations. So when there are difficulties, when there are situations, it's not weird to start talking about it. It's you're not usually on the defensive and suddenly like, oh, hello, what's going on? It's just part of your regular.
But again, if you do find that hard, as Steve said, it can be really good if you've got another trusted couple or a couple of couples. And we've had instances with one member of a couple coming to us and saying, there's something I really need to talk about. The other person's not listening. Could we just come and have lunch with you? And we've just sat over a meal and they've been able to express, and the other one has listened because they're just in a room with other people. So And there's no shame in that, because we all struggle.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
We can all be judgmental of one another. We can all be ungracious at times. And actually, we just need to be real about this. Actually, we might be in church ministry, but we are human, and we can, and we show warts and all to our partner. And sometimes we will rub each other up the wrong way. And sometimes we need support with that. That's just...
And as church ministers,
the way life is.
As church ministers, I think it's really healthy to show your congregation exactly that as well. Don't just keep it under covers. It's like it gives people permission. It's not like we're put on a pedestal. You know, we've got our act together. It's like, as Claire said, we're all humans. We all have challenges, and particularly in our relationships. And I think being very honest about where you're at. You don't have to tell it all, you know, every detail, but just actually, this is what we do. We communicate, we talk, we ask for help because we need help. And it just gives other people permission in one sense to do that for themselves.
So I think I have observed something in a lot of marriages, and maybe even my own at times, but there's something I think in the Christian world where I'm not sure people think that it's a reasonable expectation to be happy in your marriage. You're just supposed to be faithful in your marriage, and happiness, well, that might be a nice byproduct. So it's not a very good question, but it is an observation that I wonder if you might reflect on with me. Am I miles off base and we're just editing all of this out, or is there something there?
Yeah, I think there is something to that. You know, I think just that sense of, and partly, I suppose, some of my complacency came from the fact that, well, we're in a Christian marriage, that's it for life. You know, and actually, I don't think God's called us just to survive. You know, he's called us to thrive. You know, Jesus talked about an abundant life. And you know, ultimately, again, as we mentioned in the book, marriage is a beautiful picture of the church as the bride of Christ and Christ himself. It's a gospel representation. And I think actually when we start to see marriage in that term as actually, you know, we're living epistles anyway, but in our marriage, we are demonstrating something of Christ and his church. And you think that elevates it to a much higher level than just we need to be faithful. We need to just get on, you know, like it and lump it. I think actually it elevates it to this is something that we can actually model to the world and culture around us, something beautiful, something ultimately that reflects Christ's grace, glory, love, compassion, his character at the end of the day. So, yeah, I do think there can be an element to that.
But then when you think about that and a picture of Jesus and the church, you think of the whole self-sacrificial. That's what immediately springs to mind. Dying to yourself, which we've put all of that in the book, and preferring the other.
Yeah.
And there's a huge cost.
There is.
But actually, when you do those things, you are much more fulfilled. So the joy comes than if you weren't doing them. Mm. And that's kind of the irony in a way, that actually we want to keep hold of ourselves, but there's that independence. But actually, if you give yourself fully, you have a much deeper relationship, and you are fulfilled much more deeply as well. I'm just thinking of Song of Solomon, where they're absolutely enamored with one another. And obviously we're not walking around like that all the time, but there is that, that picture of when you give yourself fully to someone that actually and Steve was my best friend. And I still do. Sometimes I'm surprised when I think about, he was the first person that I called when I was left by myself, because I was already missing him. I knew that it was a part of me that I'd ripped off, that I needed, that I just called out to. And actually, there is a joy in that, but we have the mundane of life, and it can be very easy that you end up on that hamster wheel. And I refer to the fact that we're going through a really difficult time right now. And I think we've had to be really intentional about doing things that we enjoy. Yeah. Because we are so run out, and life is pretty tough and exhausting right now. Mm. But we need those connections that bring us life and bring us joy. And so we've been doing some things
Going to the theatre and stuff. Yeah,
going to the theatre, going into exhibitions and things, doing some things that we never normally have time to do. We think, actually, we need these to survive. Mm. But they also bring us a lot of joy. And so I think it's cultivating those practices within your marriage that's particular to you as a couple that you know bring life and joy to you. And sometimes it is about preferring the other. You might end up going and doing an activity that your partner likes much more than you do, but actually doing it together and seeing the joy in them brings you joy too.
And it's so countercultural, isn't it? Because, you know, for most people, it's like a relationship is what can I get out of this? And as soon as I stop getting out what I need, I'm off onto the next one. And I, you know, the whole thing of giving yourself, preferring one another, it is the way to deep, rich fulfillment if you are both doing that. And I know that can be a big if.
Yeah. It's so good what you're saying. And I really love that bit about, you know, this is a really difficult season and it's very sort of, it's challenging. It could be stressful, which is often the time where we separate from each other, isn't it? You sort of put your head down, you engage with whatever it is that you're finding difficult and you become distanced. And I love the fact that you're saying in these times, we want to be really intentional about having fun, spending time together, that connecting thing.
Well, being totally honest, because we saw the warning signs.
Yeah.
We have gone through a period with, I'm not going to go into detail. This is something that I've had to learn because this is not my story, but a child with mental health issues. And I was having to do a lot of care for very, very long hours because I was the safe person. And it meant we were very, very pulled apart through nothing that we were doing. It was just had to be that way. But also we had quite different views on how to deal with it as well. And I was so wrung out and desperate for support. And actually I could get quite angry thinking, well, I'm not getting what I need. I'm thinking there are massive red flags here. What can we do to make sure we're still connecting? What can we do to make sure we can still have fun together? Because actually we're not in a great place just through exhaustion. And so it was something that we felt we really had to do in order to keep connecting.
I think that's quite common. You know, we have opposites attract, as often said, but we can come at the same situation from completely different angles. But what we have found and what can work is that sense of tag teaming, where actually someone comes at it from this angle, but actually there's a complementary way of doing it. And together you work through this season. But so long as Claire said, we saw those red flags. We saw where it could have done that and thought, okay, we need to bring some connection back here.
It's really good. Do you know what's also helpful there is that this is not a circumstance that you've got, that it's a tough season because of the way that you're behaving towards one another. It's actually a season of life. You know, there's something going on outside of you. And often I think those can be the ones where we, you know, you don't have control over that. And so in that space, being willing to recognize that you need to invest in your marriage, and that the warning signs aren't you're working too long or you're doing anything. It's just the pressures of life are on us, and that could drive us apart. So, and I'm sure many of our church leaders will recognize that something that comes from the outside and is driving a wedge. But unless you pay attention to it, you can find yourself in a place where you need a lot more work than going to the theatre to make sure that you're repairing it.
And obviously recognizing that each person has different capacities, emotional capacities. As Claire said, you know, she's a very emotional person, but that makes her incredibly empathetic. You know, you can just that sense of feeling it. I you know, sometimes you have to hit me over the head with a hammer, you know, in one sense, for me to get that sense of depth emotionally. I need to become a lot more emotionally intelligent. That's true. I'm on that journey. But actually it's recognizing that rather than saying, oh, we're okay, or because I'm okay. It's actually, you know, the partner's actually she's wrung out here.
And I also say what you were just saying there about something coming from the outside. I mean, obviously, we have all lived through the pandemic. And I think in all our different circles, I think we are beginning to recognize that it has been a huge burden on church leaders. I can remember, I mean, that season, I am only just beginning to come to terms with what I haven't. So My mum died just before lockdown. And then we were thrust into lockdown, and we were, I was helping Steve get church online. We started doing church from, we're in our little garden studio that we've got at the moment. So our kids came down here and helped to lead worship, and then we would take it in turns to preach from down here. So it was really full on. And then we were, as soon as kids got back into school, that's when one of our children started really struggling with their mental health issues. So it's been bam, 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 straight on. But one of the things that I found as soon as the pandemic was over, as in like the lockdowns, and we were trying to get back to normality, a lot of church leaders were saying, come on, we've got, what's the fresh thing that God's got? We need to just push on. And I was this feeling, I know this is me. I know that I've gone through an incredible amount in the last couple of years, but I know it's not just me. Mm. I know there are so many people within our churches who are in pain. And actually, I think a lot of our leaders are as well. I think we're burnt out. Mm. I think we need to acknowledge that. And yes, we need to be asking God what he has for us, but we also need to be asking him for healing for what we've just been through. I'm on a bit of a journey with the whole subject of lament, and that is going to be the subject of my next book, which I'm supposed to be writing now. But I'm still considering that because, I mean, way before COVID happened, at any given Sunday in any congregation, we have got the whole spectrum of emotions within. Mm. And yes, we are to lift our eyes to Jesus. And yet what did he do when he came up against grief? He cried alongside his friends. And it's like, how are we doing that? Mm. And as leaders, are we allowing ourselves to do that too? Because as Steve just said, he's not very emotionally intelligent. I think there are probably quite a lot of church leaders like that. And I think there has been a lot of burnout. And I don't think leaders have recognized it in themselves. They might have, actually, as you've said, quite often we can recognize things in others and we might see it in some of our congregation. Are we taking the time to look after ourselves emotionally and spiritually, etc., just to check in and see how are we doing after all of what we've been through, and make that an ongoing practice?
Oh, we've ended miles away from our intended conversation, but it's really helpful. I wonder if I can circle us back, and we'll maybe see if then Lisa can bring us into land. I'll make that your responsibility. But I think one of the remarkable things about your story is the fact that you've been on not only of that journey of brokenness, but of that journey of reconciliation. And I think for some people, the fear of raising questions about we're not doing so well, is they're not clear that if we acknowledge there's a problem, how do we ever fix it? And you've obviously, you know, you talked about counselling and stuff like that, but you must have walked in paths of forgiveness and reconciliation. And I just wonder if you might talk a little bit about that and how that's worked for you.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously you mentioned forgiveness and reconciliation. I think it's important to point out that they are two separate things, obviously. And obviously you can't have reconciliation without forgiveness, but you can have forgiveness without reconciliation. And I think it's important to point out sometimes it's not appropriate or possible to reconcile, depending on different situations. But it's always possible to forgive. And it's, you know, it's one of the hardest things God asks us to do. And the truth is we don't do it in our own strength. We do it in his strength. For me, it was just a matter of reminding myself that ultimately forgiveness is for our own benefit. It releases us from that resentment, that bitterness. I knew I had to daily keep my spirit in check and say, you know, it's a daily choice, because it is a choice. It's not a feeling. It's a choice. I choose to forgive. I choose to forgive. And it does, you know, you talk about triggers earlier on, and there will be triggers that will just fly up and go, you know, like Claire was mentioning with just me becoming so self-absorbed with my own work and suddenly seeing patterns forming again. It's just like little triggers. And you think, actually, okay, yeah, we need to work on that, but I still forgive him, and vice versa. So yes, God in his incredible grace brought us reconciliation. The first step though was forgiveness. Absolutely.
And I think it's, I mean, it's a massive thing. And as Steve said, it is a daily choice. I think, and people quite often come to Steve first when they come with that question, because obviously I'm the one who walked out the door. And yet it was a massive thing for me to forgive Steve in order to be able to think, can I see this relationship working? But also the thing that really tied me up in knots actually was forgiving the other person. And because it felt like we came back into the situation and they just got off scot-free. Mm-hmm. And I really struggled with that for a long time until I read Artie Kendall's Total Forgiveness. And that's where he spells out, actually, it's not for their benefit. They've got no idea what impact this is having, this unforgiveness is having on you. They're off living their lives. It's you that's being tied up in knots, and understanding that. But it's also about forgiving yourself too.
Yeah.
And to begin with, I didn't really see an issue there. I think in my book, Taking Off the Mask, I talk about the fact I wore a victim mask. I had that kind of mentality. It's all this, I'm the one who's been wronged, da, da, da. I'm the one who's been left to be so lonely. And I still was very much in that victim mindset. So I couldn't really see. Obviously, I had to deal with the consequences and the embarrassment of facing other people. So I had that. But in my heart, I thought, I haven't understood this. And it took quite a long time for me to fully recognize it. But when I did, that whole humbling, oh my goodness, before God, but then I had to choose to forgive myself. And that actually was really difficult, really difficult. I think someone, I suffer from, or I did when I was younger, and it's something I still have to battle with low self-esteem. So then actually forgiving yourself can be quite a battle. But it's really important to be able to step into that freedom. So I think actually it's the daily choice to forgive the other, but it's also a daily choice to forgive yourself when God does reveal to you the things that in your behavior that need changing. And there needs to be that humility there. And as leaders, we can tend to think, oh no, we've got to have things together. We've got to not have any problems, but actually stopping and thinking, no, I do fall short here. God, you pointed this out for a reason. Help me with this, but actually help me to forgive myself in it too.
And of course, you know, all forgiveness is in the light of God's forgiveness to us. And you keep going back there. You know, if you have trouble with forgiveness, just keep going back to the cross, keep going back to the source of it all. And, you know, we forgive because he forgave us. And that's, you know, an eternal source of strength and inspiration. And, you know, with regards to reconciliation, I mean, obviously we talked about forgiveness, but trust is a huge one, particularly when trust has been broken. And, you know, they always say, oh, trust has got to be earned. And it's one sense that I caught myself thinking, how sorry really is Claire? Is she sorry enough? You know, and I was just, I think God really brought me up short on that. And it's just like, no. You choose to forgive and you choose to trust. You choose to put your heart out there again. Whenever we enter a close relationship, there's always that vulnerability. And if the other alternative is to start building walls to protect your heart. And of course, then you limit any sense of depth of intimacy. And that can be a real danger. And so I kept praying, God, guard my heart from building walls. Keep my heart soft. Keep me being prepared to be vulnerable, to put it out there. You know, just I choose to trust, and that I know that is a vulnerable place, particularly when we've been hurt. But it is the only way to continue and develop and foster deep, intimate relationship, which, of course, what marriage is all about.
Guys, thank you. I mean, just honestly, we're going to need to listen to this a bunch of times and even maybe do some of the things I suggest. but, I mean, it's just an awesome story of redemption, isn't it, and of restoration and courage, actually, on both your parts to, you know, face things and just move on with them. And I think perhaps we underestimate how much courage is needed to have the conversation, to deal with the stuff in ourselves and to engage with each other. And it's not always really easy, is it? And doesn't always resolve itself really quickly and needs some hard work and some brave conversations. So thank you for all that you've committed to that. And I guess just kind of want to wrap up by encouraging people, if they're listening, to maybe look at your book, even Grace-Filled Marriage, some really good stuff in there about halfway through. And to ask for some help. And actually people are far less kind of judgmental than we imagine they're going to be, aren't they? Because actually behind the doors, we all know that these things are quite challenging and we have our vulnerabilities. And I guess the other bit is just to say, you know, we're talking about normal stuff of normal challenging marriages when things are difficult. And sometimes we know that people are going through more extreme stuff, even abusive stuff. And there's different kind of help and resources available if you find yourself in that kind of situation. And so we just need to be wise about that, don't we? But thank you so much. Honestly, it's been absolutely brilliant having you to join us today. So you've contributed so much, and we really hope that that's helpful. I think it'll be helpful to me.
Definitely. Well, definitely. I might not let my wife listen to this podcast. She'll have too many ideas. But were you listening, Glenn? Were you listening?
You're not letting her listen to any of the podcasts we've done recently, are you?
It's good. Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah,
thank you.
Having us.
Thank you.